This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, my guest this week is Billy King, the former general manager of the Brooklyn Nets, Philadelphia 76ers, now analyst over at Turner, NBA TV. Billy joins me on the podcast once again. Billy, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you just got back from All-Star. I just got back from All-Star. I guess we should kind of summarize some of the things that we saw there. And I guess the only thing that has any kind of carryover is the game itself and the format that was changed, players drafting other players. It seemed to me from previous experience watching All-Star games that this was a more competitive one. Now, I don't think you'll ever get guys playing full throttle defense, nor do I think you'll get them contesting shots at the rim. But it, you know, from really the first quarter on, it felt like it had a different level of intensity, which if that's the case, that makes it an unmitigated success given the disaster that was last year. What did you think about what you saw?
Well, I thought it was a 100% success. I think a lot of credit goes to the players because they're the game, and they didn't like what was going on as well as the fans, and they decided to make a change. And I thought that it started with the leadership of LeBron and Steph, because if they'd have went into the game and just approached it, well, that's just an All-Star game, I'm not going to compete. But I thought LeBron and Steph competed, so then that forced everybody else to compete. And, yeah, they were very conscious of not trying to hurt anybody, but it became competitive. And I think it was enjoyable to watch from start to finish. And that's the one thing I like about – I've always liked about the NBA is that from David Stern to Adam Silver is they tend to listen to their players, and Adam much so even more, and try to give them a little more input. And once they do that, they take ownership of it. And I think they did that with the All-Star game.
Is life as an executive better or worse when you have the trade deadline before the All-Star break? This was the first year in, I think, ever, at least a very long time, that the trade deadline has come prior to the All-Star game.
I think it's very good because it gives you know what your team is going to be come from the All-Star break. So it gives the coach time to prepare his roster. If he wants to change offense, you have some time to practice when you get back. But it does give you time preparing. So, you know, there's a natural break. This is our team when we come back. And when you go to practice starting everybody today or tomorrow when they get together, they're ready. They're not sitting there thinking, is there going to be another trade? So I think it was a smart move in the league. Because now everybody knows what their roster is. And also from a management standpoint, you can start looking at, do we need to add any 10 days or guys being bought up? So it gets a lot of that business out of the way. So when the break happens, all you're doing now, you have 26 games to play before the season ends.
Yeah, and you know the buyout market is what's going to be most interesting for contending teams over the next couple of weeks. We've already had two significant players on the market. Joe Johnson, he gets bought out. He winds up in Houston. Marco Bellinelli, he winds up in Philadelphia, being bought up from Atlanta. After that, I guess Brandon Wright is in that mix as well. But after that, kind of a lull there. Are you anticipating kind of several more names to wind up on the market as we head towards March 1st?
There may be one or two, but I think most of them have done it. They were going to do it. I think there'll be some guys that may try to push their idea of getting bought out. But I think the big-name guys that were going to be bought out have been bought out, and I think teams are now are looking forward to, all right, where are we going from here? Because this is such a short window now. It always has been, but I think this year it's even shorter how many games they have left to play before the regular season ends.
I do think, though, that there might be kind of a game of chicken going on between some teams and some of the players they have there. I mean, you look at the teams that are in the bottom of the conferences, respectively. Some of these teams just don't want to win. And, if there are guys on their roster that might help them win games, I would think they'd want to be rid of them, wouldn't they? Like, wouldn't you want to find some kind of, use Ersan Ilyasova as an example or any of these other number of guys that are on teams that are you know, kind of going nowhere. I would think that some of it's just a matter of how much money a player is willing to give back. That seems to me as kind of one of the fallouts from the trade deadline being moved up, is that you have even more time to kind of debate the possibility of buying out a guy with your owner and with the player, of course.
Well, you do, but I think now for a lot of those guys that may be contemplating buyouts, they got to see where can they fit. You know, who's going to, you know, if I'm giving up money, do I have a job? Do I fit in that team's rotation? And a lot of these teams at the top are pretty stacked, and that's going to be the hard part, because if you wait too long, there's not a roster spot for you where you can go and try to fit in.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks. All right, as we enter this kind of last third of the season, the biggest story out there is the Cleveland Cavaliers and what they did prior to the deadline. Six players go out, four players come in, but it's the type of players that came in that's, you know, the most interesting. You've got Rodney Hood, an accomplished scorer in Utah, George Hill, a polished playmaker coming over from Sacramento, and a couple of young guys, and Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. Into that mix. What did you make of the deals the Cavaliers made, and did that elevate them to you back into that top of the Eastern Conference level?
Well, I think it did, in the sense of it, they got players, got, you know, George Hill, who's a experienced player, playoff experience, and has played mainly off the ball as a point guard pretty much his whole career, whether it be Paul George in Indiana there and spotting up. So that's his role, and I think it fits the way Cleveland plays. You know, Rodney Hood, I think, is a young player that is going to come in and play hard, but it will be able to knock down those shots and be able to guard people. The other two, Clarkson and Nance gives them energy. They needed someone off the bench with high energy. You know, Tristan Thompson was that guy, and now they have a Nance, so they have two guys that are going to be on the board getting extra shots. And so that, to me, is a big plus for them. And then Clarkson is the wild card, because he's a guy that can get his own shot, play off the ball, and he's gotten better defensively this year. So I think it's a great move for them now and for the future, whether LeBron stays or not, because they've got some young legs, some guys that can give them things that the other guys couldn't. It's almost like when they got J.R. Smith and Shumpert, they were younger, had some energy, and coming from a situation in New York where they weren't happy, and now they go to Cleveland and they give them high energy. And Cleveland need that, because I think they were getting older. The best thing is when they play teams like Boston now, and they play teams like, you know, Toronto, or they play some of these younger squads, they have guys that can chase them. They may not be great defenders, but at least they can be in the range. Before, they were so old, they couldn't even get close to guys to close out on three-point shots or rotate. So now they've got guys that can rotate and cover on defensive end, which will help them.
How concerned would you be that, you know, the guys they brought in, while looking like a better fit than the players that they sent out, they don't have any experience, at least it comes to the postseason? I mean, Rodney Hood has been there. I mean, George Hill, of course, has been there, been deep in the playoffs with Indiana, of course. But Clarkson, Nance, these are guys with zero playoff games under their belts. How concerned would you be that these guys aren't going to be ready for that type of moment?
I wouldn't be as concerned, because if you look at Boston, they've got, you know, Jaylen Brown has a little bit, but Tatum has none. So, you know, they've got a very similar situation. So I wouldn't be overly concerned, because you have LeBron, and they do have veteran guys that have been there. So you can be able to put those guys in certain situations. And with the playoffs, is they'll get experience. We have seven-game series. You go through the first round, you go to the second round. If they were to get to the finals, they'll understand playoff basketball very well.
Yeah, I think at least in the Eastern Conference, I think they'll be fine. I do wonder how they match up with Golden State. And that's, you know, the obvious question. I mean, this team is built, you know, is at least trying to be built not to win the East, but to win the whole thing. I mean, the possibility of a Cleveland Golden State Part Four, are they better equipped now than they were a week ago to take on the Warriors?
I think so. I really do, just for the fact they've got guys that can score, but they've got guys that can get out and give them energy, because you know Golden State does a great job of spacing the floor and spreading the basketball, moving it, and you got to have guys that can be able to rotate, as I said before, and that's the one area I just think that they didn't have that ability to rotate. And they're going to get Kevin Love back. And when they get him back, you know, it's another added piece. So I do think when they play Golden State, they have that ability. The big thing is when they play them is they've got to have to be able to knock down shots, because LeBron is going to penetrate and create shots for them, it's going to be the George Hills, the Rodney Hoods. They've got to be able to knock down those shots, because with Golden State, or if it's even Houston, you've got to be able to score with them, because they're going to score regardless. I don't care how good your defense, they're going to score. So you've got to be able to keep pace. So those guys they brought in now will have to be able to knock down big shots, because they're going to get wide open looks.
So the biggest threat, or at least one of the threats to the Cavaliers, is Boston. And you know, the Celtics, for a while, they led the Eastern Conference. Right now, as we speak, Toronto is in that top spot. But the Celtics look like they've taken a step back lately. You know, lost some games prior to the All-Star break. Jason Tatum hasn't played anywhere near as good a basketball over the last month. But the Celtics were quiet at the trade deadline. They were aggressive in trying to make a deal, from everything I was hearing. But, you know, they didn't, they weren't able to pull the trigger. They did get Greg Monroe, and they hope he's going to help down the stretch. But were you surprised that Boston didn't bring somebody in prior to the deadline?
Well, I think the hardest thing for them is, what do you give up to get something that can help you that's better than what you have? They weren't going to give up any of their key pieces. I think getting Monroe is a great piece, because he gives them somebody that can score down low and can get fouled. But, you know, they know they've got Gordon Hayward coming back next year, and so why sacrifice a piece to try to maybe get to the finals this year? And if you don't win now, you come back with Gordon Hayward, and you've weakened your team for next year. So I think they did a great thing in just adding Monroe, and figure we'll go do as best we can now. If we can win a championship, that's great. But knowing you got Gordon Hayward coming back.
Yeah, and you said next year with Hayward. I don't think he's coming back this year.
I just think it doesn't make sense. I was listening to people talk about Carson Wentz down there in Philadelphia and coming back from his knee surgery, and they talked about RG3. And remember, he came back and they played him in that playoff game and hurt his knee again. And it was never the same. So why risk a young player's future? Just maybe go a little further, and if it doesn't work and he gets hurt, then you jeopardize yourself for the long haul.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I saw him in Boston last week, and you know, he's walking around without a brace, and he's walking looking like pretty comfortably. But if you look down at that ankle, it's still kind of purplish and still swollen down there. And look, that's probably perfectly normal, but as we sit here and talk late February, you're asking people to believe that that ankle is going to be healed and he's going to be ready to go play in a playoff game by mid-April. I just can't see that happening.
Well, and especially you talk about coming back, and when the basketball picks up, the intensity level picks up tremendously. And so he would be coming back, going into the game, really had not have played all year, and trying to get his legs back and his confidence back in games that you can't afford to lose.
Yeah, no, I agree there. And you know, it is something to be excited about if you're Boston, to kind of look at how Gordon Hayward fits into that mix. And it's a good problem to have, but you know, you go into next year and you've got, you know, a three-guard/swingman rotation of Tatum, Brown, and Gordon Hayward. All three guys, you know, accustomed to being starters. All three guys capable of playing at a high level. That's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out within the Celtics, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And all those guys don't need the basketball. They can move and cut. I think that's the great thing about Golden State, is guys don't need the basketball. When you have that, that was a problem going to be for Isaiah and LeBron. They both needed the basketball to be successful. And so it was going to be tough to make it work. One of them was going to have to sacrifice, and it was most likely going to have to be Isaiah, and I don't think he was willing to do that, especially in a contract year. So I'm looking forward to seeing Boston play because, you know, one, I'm a big fan of Brad Stevens, and I think the way they play, the way he coaches, is a perfect mix.
Now, you mentioned Isaiah. It feels like it's been a lifetime ago since Isaiah was, you know, in the playoffs with Boston. It's been less than a year since that happened. And now he's a Laker, and he's going to, like you said, he's not going to have to sacrifice with the Lakers. He's going to get touches. He's going to put up numbers on a bad team. But what do you think the market's going to be for Isaiah Thomas when he hits free agency this summer?
Well, that's going to be the toughest thing for him, because almost everybody has a point guard. If you're looking at their rosters, and the teams that may not have one don't have the cap space. So I think his best bet is for them, is for LeBron to stay in Cleveland, Paul George to stay in Oklahoma City and get paid by the Lakers. So that's, I think, the only avenue for him. Otherwise, he may have to go out and take the mid-level, or a little more than mid-level, you know, one-year player option deal and prove it again. But if he can put up numbers and be a good teammate out there in L.A. and, you know, they don't get a player, he may get a $20 million deal with a player option or a team option, so he can make more money and prove it to them. I don't think they'll commit to him long term, just because, you know, if they don't get any players this year, they'll look to do it next year. But that's going to be his best bet, just because his style of play as a point guard, and I don't know how many teams he fits with going forward. He was fortunate to get to Boston, and in a situation where they were gave him the opportunity, he played well and did great for them. But, you know, he bounced around before that because his style of play is not a lot of teams play that way anymore, where point guard just shoot first and pass second.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think the best case scenario for Isaiah is that 1 year deal that you talked about with the Lakers, or maybe it's somebody else. But, you know, a team that's trying to reach that salary cap floor in the way that the Sixers did with J.J. Redick this past offseason, that's probably best case for Isaiah, which is, you know, really startling. All right, before I move out west, I want to ask you about Toronto, and that's a team that not a lot of people are talking about right now. The Raptors sitting in first place. They have revamped their bench. They've revamped the way they play offensively. Is this a better Raptor team than we've seen in years past? Because in years past, I mean, they haven't been the top seed, but they have had a top five offense. They have had, in the past, a top 10 defense. Is this a better version of Toronto?
I think it is, just for the fact that they've got some long athletic guys come off the bench and high energy. And I love the way DeMar DeRozan plays. He's playing with such great pace. He's not pressing, and he can score. The biggest concern for me, is Kyle Lowry. I think he needs to step his game up a little bit to the level that he was before, because when it comes playoff time, you're going to need both those guys to score. But I do like them. I think they're a very good defensive team, and they do move the basketball. Now, when they get in the playoffs, will they continue to do that? But right now, they're my sleeper in the East, just for the fact that nobody's talking. It's crazy to say the sleeper, the number one seed right now, but no one's talking about them. But if you watch their bench, they come off with high energy. They're very similar now to Cleveland. They come off the bench with young guys with energy, and they can steal games. And in a playoff series, those guys can come in and steal a game on the road, and that's what you need to win a seven-game series.
Yeah, the same concern, though, I would say, with the bench of the Raptors is the one I have with the Cavaliers, and that's, you know, young guys. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Delon Wright. You're talking about Pascal Siakam. You're talking about Fred VanVleet. These are late first-round picks, or in the case of VanVleet, undrafted, who have, you know, played very little in a high-pressure type of situation. So, with the offense, I have concerns, but I have just as many about young guys stepping into bigger roles. But I guess if there aren't a lot of teams out there with that kind of playoff experience, it gets a little bit easier, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of the teams at the top are in that same situation. So it's going to be whose young guys on their bench come in and prove it and rise to the occasion. And that's the great thing about playoff basketball, is that's when guys shine. That's when guys, you realize, wow, where'd that guy come from? We've never heard of him. Because they get exposure and people get to see them play. So it's going to be whose bench in the East young guys step up and are not overshadowed by the limelight and have deer in the headlights and go out and play. So to me, you're going to get LeBron's game. You're going to get Kyrie. You're going to get Horford. All those guys, you know what they're going to do. It's going to be the X factor of those other guys. How do they perform in that situation?
Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 sleep night trial to ensure perfection and 120 night low price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow.
Okay, so as these rosters currently stand with Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee, the Wizards, which team out there in the East, anyway, has the best chance of knocking off the Cavs in a seven-game series?
I just say Toronto, just for the fact they have two guys that are proven scorers and done in the playoffs. And I like their defense, and I like their length, because they can give Cleveland some problems with their defensive length. Boston, I love them as a team, but I just worry as with Jaylen Brown and Tatum, so much is going to be on their shoulders. Can they carry that load? Because when you get in the playoffs, they're going to know every move you do, and it's going to be, you know, how can you overcome that? And I don't know if they have the experience to do that. So that's my concern with them. I think Kyrie's great in Orford, but I worry about them. So I would say Toronto.
All right, so let's move out west for a minute here and talk about the Warriors, who right now have as many losses, I believe, by the All-Star break that they did in each of the last couple of seasons a total. You know, this team, it looks like in some ways they're going through the motions. It looks like that, you know, in year four of a potential finals team, they're having some trouble getting motivated for regular season games. Are you seeing any of that in Golden State? And is that, if that's the case, is that a cause for concern as they enter the postseason?
It would be cause concern if they were just, you know, their first year coming off the finals. But these guys have been there, and they've got veterans. And right now, after this break, they know coming in, it's time to play. And the one thing when you have a team like that, they're going to be on big games, national TV games, so that motivation factor will be gone. But it is when you have an 82-game season, guys get what motivated them before when they were trying to break their record, that kept them going. Last year, I thought it kept them going as losing to Cleveland the year before. This year, I think, you know, it's like, okay, let's just stay healthy and have ourselves ready for the playoffs. And so I'm not concerned with them. I think they'll be there, and those guys will rise to the occasion.
They have 14 losses. They had 15 in 16-17 and 15 in 14-15. So they're right there on the cusp of that total loss number. I guess my concern with the Warriors, not the starting lineup, I mean, like, you can't be worried about Durant and Thompson and Green. These guys are great, and they'll turn it up a notch. Is the bench, which, you know, is a little bit older in some spots with Iguodala and David West, and certainly younger in some spots with Patrick McCaw, and, you know, if Jordan Bell gets into the mix in the postseason, is that bench a cause for concern there? Is there any reason to believe that those guys will be less effective than they have been in years past?
I don't worry about Iguodala or West, because West is not, his minutes aren't going to be that many. When you get in the playoffs, you have enough days to rest, so they're going to play their guys most of the minutes. But I do, the McCaw guys that have never been there, do can have concern about them. So that is a concern, but I just know in the playoffs, with the way the schedule and they space it out, they have enough time to play their guys a lot of minutes and rest. So I don't see their some of their key bench guys being affected.
I don't know, man. Like the Iguodala's shooting percentage is cratered. Like he's at like 23% from 3-point range. He was never a great 3-point shooter, but he was at 36 last year, 35 the year before that, 35 the year before that. I don't know. I mean, he's relied on to make that corner three pretty consistently, and now he's bottoming out there.
Yeah, but I think that goes in a lot of what we were talking about before is the grind of the regular season, where guys maybe aren't as focused, so to say, on those shots. I just think come playoff time, I think he'll be there. I think Sean Livingston, those guys, they'll be ready to go. It's just something about playoff basketball, especially when you get to this time of year, see the veterans guys, where you count them out, and they're not going to make shots, and they make them. They make the big shots. They make the big plays because they know it's another chance to win.
All right, well, they're going to need him. Let me ask you about the team that's the biggest threat to them right now. That's the Houston Rockets, sitting right now in first place in the conference. Number one defense, or number one offense, should say, in the NBA. Defense ranked inside the top 10. This is probably the most formidable threat, I would say, that the Warriors have faced in each of the last 4 years. The Rockets have added Chris Paul to the mix. He's been great in the games he's played in. Defensively, the presence of Luke Mbamute and, you know, P.J. Tucker and, you know, the development of Clint Capella. You know, Mike D'Antoni's often said that if they can be a top 10 defensive team, they're a championship threat. Do you look at the Rockets as a true championship threat?
I do, for the fact that the one factor is, you know, they're going to score, and so they put pressure on you every game is because they're going to put up points. They're going to shoot enough threes that, you know, they're going to make enough. And that, to me, is what scares me. Their defense has been great, but offensively, they're going to score a lot. And I like the fact having Chris Paul, because you get the ball to James Harden's hands. I think last year, in the past, Harden has had to handle the ball, create the offense, and I think it wore him out. Now with Chris Paul there setting the table, it's a lot easier for him. So I look for Harden to be, you know, great, and I think their offense is going to put a lot of pressure on Golden State just for the fact they're going to score points and they're going to defend you. And like you said, having Capella back there blocking shots, and it reminds me a lot of the Phoenix team with Mike D'Antoni had it, when Steve Nash was the point guard and they had big fellow, I can't think of his name, end up in New York, Stoudemire,
yeah.
You know, he was back there being athletic and running, getting lobs because of floor was space. But this team is, to me, is even better than that team. And they had Steve Nash run the show, had guys spacing out shooting shots. So I like this team a lot. And I think it's funny how people just sort of talk about Golden State going back to the finals. I think they're going to have a tough time with Houston just for the fact Houston scores and puts so much pressure on you offensively. And this year they're guarding you.
You had Joe Johnson in Brooklyn. His numbers continue to dip over the last 4 years. Only averaged about 7 points per game with the Jazz this season. Can he have any kind of impact with the Rockets down the stretch?
I think he will in a playoff game. I think Joe Johnson will steal a playoff game in a series because of the fact he'll be spotting up. And they space floor so well, and Joe will be spotting up in the corner, and Chris Paul will find him and get him easy shots. I don't think you'll see Joe playing big minutes, but I think in a series, you know, in a game, if he's in there for 15 minutes, you know, playing, or, you know, Chris will get him easy shots. And Joe's a guy, he's a rhythm shooter. Once he gets on a rhythm, he can knock down a lot of threes, and he has a knack for getting to the open spot. And with Chris Paul, he'll be able to find him. So I think Joe will win a game and a series for them when it matters.
All right, let me finish with a team that, at best case, gets into the playoffs, and that's Utah. And they've been one of the most remarkable stories to me all season long, Billy, because, you know, they go into the year and you say, all right, maybe they'll tank because they lose Gordon Hayward. They need to add another star. All of a sudden, Donovan Mitchell emerges as a future star with this team. Rudy Gobert goes down. You think they're going to tank again. They become an offensive juggernaut over the few weeks that Gobert missed. Now they're sitting there fighting for that eighth playoff spot. I mean, they might have the coach of the year in Quinn Snyder and the rookie of the year in Donovan Mitchell, and they might not even make the playoffs. I mean, that's pretty remarkable, that the season the Jazz have had, you know, given all they've had to deal with all season long.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, you're right, people wrote them off. Once Gordon Hayward left, they said, you know, they're done. You know, they're not going to be able to win. And the one thing is, and Quinn Snyder, one of my roommates or teammates from college, and not the Duke bias coming out, but I think he's one of the most underrated coaches there, and he's done a good job. He's taken Ricky Rubio, who everybody was sort of, you know, rolled over and said he can't play anymore, can't guard, can't do anything, and he's given him confidence to run that team with Gobert in the back blocking shots and rebounding the basketball, and Donovan Mitchell scoring. I like that team, and they gave up a Rodney Hood, who a lot of people thought, why would they just give him away? But they went and got Crowder, who I think fits the way they want to play and gives them some physical presence, because the one thing I didn't think they had was a physical presence. And now, given Crowder, it gives them a guy that, on the wing, that could be a little more physical. So I like their team, and the most amazing thing I like about Utah is how they've drafted over the years, from Kevin O'Connor to Dennis now. They've drafted amazing with Rudy and Donovan Mitchell, Rodney Hood. They draft guys, and then they do a great job of working them and developing those players. And so it's for a small market team that always flies on the radar, they never really go in that tank mode. They may have one or two seasons where they lose, but it's not really a tank. They're developing their guys while they're doing that.
What do you think that teams missed on Donovan Mitchell? Is it just that, you know, I mean, you don't like, teams don't seem to like to draft guys that have prototypical size for their position. Mitchell was kind of a tweener, you know, 6'2", bounced between guard spots. He seems to have found a home at that two-guard position. It's one of the reasons I think they moved off of Rodney Hood instead of to pay Hood at the end of the year. What do you think teams missed on him?
Well, I think people try to look at, like, exactly what you said, they try to think of reasons not to draft a guy rather than reasons they should draft him. Whether he's too small, doesn't have position, not sure if he can handle it. They look at a lot of different things rather than say, the guy can score, the guy's explosive, high energy, and especially the way the game is being played now, it's almost positionless basketball. You just get your five best guys out there and just play. And it's the same way that everybody plays basketball when they go to the play pickup. They're not saying, I got to get a center, I got to get a two guard, it's got to be this height. They just pick five guys they think they can win with, and they go play. And I think that's where the NBA has gone to, and that's what I think Utah saw in Donovan Mitchell. He's a basketball player that's been successful in college, and if we give him the right tools, right ability here, and opportunity, he'll be successful here.
Do you see him as a full-time two? Do you see him as a eventual one? I mean, or does it matter, I guess, in today's NBA?
Yeah, I think he'll end up playing the two, but I think it doesn't matter because I think now a lot of times people play two-point guards in the backcourt and don't worry about it. So I think they'll put him out there and try to put guys around him, especially when you have a guy like Rudy Gobert behind you. It doesn't really matter if you have a smaller two or a smaller one. If you got a guy back there protecting the rim, it doesn't matter because it's harder to post up because those guys are there. So, but I look at him as they'll continue to play the two.
Yeah, I think he's got a great potential at that number two spot. I mean, playing for the right guy. I mean, I don't know how. Yeah, you know, Quinn Snyder really has emerged one of the best developmental coaches in the NBA. I know you're familiar with him from your Duke days there, but he's he really has become a terrific coach at taking young talent and just molding it. And you know, he took Hayward as a guy that was coming out of Butler and a nice prospect, made him into an all-star, and here again, in a kid like Mitchell taking him, and we give credit to Dennis Lindsay in the front office, and we should, but you know what Quinn's been able to do with that group, it's really impressive.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Quinn is one, you know, wherever he's been. When he left Duke and went to Missouri, he won there, and then you know, was out of the game, got back, San Antonio brought him in, and Austin Turros, they won there. So the crazy about Quinn is, I love him, but he graduated from Duke, then got his law degree from Duke, and then after he got both degrees, he decided to be a coach. And I told him, Quinn, you didn't need to go to law school or business school to become a coach. You could have just done that. But I think that's how his thinking, his training, his mind, he was trained to think, and that's what business and law school do, is train you to think rather than free the profession. So I think his mind is unbelievable, and he's always thinking and trying to be creative with their defense, with their offense, and so, and then even with the development, a lot of times head coaches don't get involved with development. They leave it up to the development guy, and they don't even go watch the guys. I think the best ones, and I learned this from Larry Brown, is when the head coach invests time in young guys and their development, they realize it, and they work even harder, and they become better players. It's when the head coach doesn't even acknowledge that they're working out, players don't put as much effort into development.
Didn't Larry Brown want to trade all of his guys at all times?
He'd like to move guys around. You know?
Yeah, you think?
You know, the best thing about Larry is, you know, he was always in my office leading up to the deadline, and then after the deadline, I didn't see him again. I had to go find him.
Great. Love Larry. Billy, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking some time to join me here on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Support for this podcast, as always, comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Chris Mannix from Yahoo Sports here at the Verizon Up Members Lounge. 11-time All-Star Chris Bosh, 10-time All-Star Paul Pierce, Big 3 All-Star Brian Scalabrine.
I didn't even make that.
I didn't know. I was giving you that.
I was all area of my high school, though.
Can we address the elephant in the room here real quick? Are you ready to commit to play for Scal's Big 3 team?
I'll take either one of you two.
I'm not quite there yet to give the full commitment. I want to, like, when I get into something, I want to make sure I'm fully prepared and ready. I'm starting my workouts after the All-Star weekend, so I'll see where I am, how it's coming, and I'll let them know. You know,
what do you think, Scott?
Well, I'm glad that you asked, because I've been asking them now for like the last 3 months.
I've been getting courted for about the last 3 weeks, so let me see how my body responds. It feels, my body feels so good right now, though. I mean, to go back and to do, you know, ride the bike, be on the treadmill, run up some stairs, well, do that again, I'm like, I was killing myself.
It ain't 82, man. It's one still, game a week, half court.
No, but y'all play every game like it's game seven. I watch those games.
Sure.
Jason Williams tore his ACL.
Okay, that was
Corey Maggette tore his Achilles.
Okay.
Like, what is going on? I thought this was.
Yeah, but
like,
this is coming from a guy who never gets hurt. So.
Yeah, but this is different. This
is different. I'm telling you. If I can make it, you can make it. I got that whack body. You'll be fine. Anyway, let's go, Chris.
Chris, I know you want back in the league, but is the big three an option for you down the line?
I mean, hey, man, look, I'm open to recruiting trips, you know, dinners.
For sure.
Flights. You know, just let me know, man. That's, yeah. I'm open to it. I love being recruited.
You can play with Ricky Davis again. You can go out there and...
Ricky D.
Ricky Davis.
Ricky
get buckets.
D wins all the big pots. You know what I'm talking about.
You guys are sitting here now as friends, but you know, back in the day, you guys were part of a pretty heated rivalry. How would you describe the relationship between the two of you during your playing days?
Well, we didn't like the heat. I mean, let's just. It wasn't about that. It was the fact that we had a rivalry with Cleveland, which LeBron was on. Then LeBron goes to Miami, and so it kind of like carried over to Miami now. And as you know, Miami was like probably the most hated team in America because they formed a super team. And so it wasn't like that we didn't like them, but you know, nobody liked them at the time. You guys know that. You guys were the villains. And you know, it just went from Cleveland to Miami.
I mean, I think it was, and you know, they won a championship before we did not, and we knew we were going to have to play them. They knew we were going to have to play us. Right. So
let's get to, like, did those conversations happen, obviously, before? Like it's going to be tough to beat, you know, with Rondo coming up, Paul KG.
Yeah, you know what time it is. So, I mean, absolutely.
So how did that go? Like, for us to beat these guys, we got to come together, and there is a way for us to do it?
Well, I mean, it was more like trial and error. Because we couldn't beat them in the regular season, I think for the first like two seasons or something like that. I think we won one regular season game, and so it was like this thing to where it was like a code we had to crack all the time. And you know, and we know we're going to see them in the playoffs, and we've got to be playing a certain way because we know where they're going to be at. We know what the toughness on defense that they're going to bring, leadership, the fans, the environment. You know, people don't know that about Boston, man. It's the toughest place I've ever had to play. So to have to go there and win games on the road, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a lot to deal with. So you just keep that on your mind the whole season, kind of.
You know, I'm going to say something. They wouldn't have beat us if it wasn't for this guy, in all honesty.
Yeah. Super under. Like, does not get the credit he deserves.
That's what I want to say. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves for that team because he hit so many big shots. And I remember, I think maybe game seven, he hit. I like, basketball memory is a crazy memory. You remember little things all the time. And I remember a corner three he hit on us was the biggest shot of the game. And if he doesn't hit that, I think we go on to the finals or something. And it's like he took away another opportunity for us to get to the finals. And he really doesn't get the credit he deserves. So now I'm glad I had a chance to sit here and let him know that he was a huge part of what they were doing. And, you know, people don't know, he was the stretch five. Yeah. You know, this wasn't going on because of Golden State. You know, he was the stretch five for them, shooting three-pointers, and teams didn't have that at the time.
Yeah, I wanted to go on with that because I thought you said something very interesting when Kevin Love went to Cleveland. You said, I don't know if the people really understand what you were saying. He's going to have a hard time adjusting to playing with LeBron because LeBron wants the ball here. So if you want the ball there, it's not going to work. Like, how hard was it when you first got there to adjust to all the different spots you had to be on the floor?
It was very difficult. I mean, I was a post-dominant player. That's what I aspired to be. That's what my heroes were doing. That's where the league was. And that's what my game was predicated towards. I was trying to be the best. The right block was what I was good at. And, you know, taking advantage, facing guys up. And then, you know, when I got there, well, LeBron, he's posting up now. Dwayne, his post-up game is nice now. And sometimes it just would clog things up. And that space that we needed, it just didn't work. We weren't that type of team.
So when did you decide, like, okay, I need to be able to
go work for.
Listen, he didn't decide. LeBron decided, like, you need to go over here in this corner. He didn't decide.
Just like Kevin Love being a five. They're like, you are now a five.
Well, I mean, it goes. I mean, look, I have a perfect example. I drew on my experience from the Olympics because I got to play with that team at a young age and everything. I'm like, all right, look, you got Kobe, Bron, Melo, and D-Wade out there. I'm not getting the ball. Move, you know, and that's how it's gonna work. So I kind of just took that same mentality, and I just got over it. It was like, you know, and then guys was double teaming me. They wouldn't double team Bron and D, but I didn't get it, so I just stopped posting up.
Well, Miami gave way to Golden State, and Cleveland formed a super team of their own. Do you in some way feel like kind of the father of the super teams and how they came together?
You know, I think we have like kind of like some responsibility for that, because I don't think if there was Boston's three, there wouldn't have been Miami, and then there wouldn't be Golden State. But it's just about how it all came together. You know, it wasn't like I called Kevin as a free agent or, you know, told Ray. It just kind of like came about luckily through trades and, you know, guys waiving no trade clauses, and it happened. And it changed the NBA, because this is what you see now. And so kind of somewhat we are the bearers of that. But, and now it's like it's happening a different way. It's not happening through trades. It's like guys are like, this is what we need to do to win. So we probably created that blueprint. But it's great for the league, I think. Yeah. You know, I like big threes. You know, now it's like we're headed to the era of big fours now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I thought three was great. When you look at Golden State now with four all-stars consistently, it's like now you have to have four all-stars to consistently win.
Chris, do you think it's good for the NBA? Because the counter-argument is, well, if there's one team coming out of the East every year, one team coming out of the West, where's the parity? How do you – and the NBA would love nothing more than to have NFL-style parity across the board.
Well, I mean – it's all about competing. You want to see what I would like to see, and I think we haven't seen. It's cool, in the finals, but you want to see guys get beat up on the way to the finals. We had to play Chicago. We had to play Boston, Indiana. You know, we had
rough roads.
You know, and then you feel lucky to get to the finals. You know, I don't think people are feeling that. I like where Golden State and the Rockets are headed right now. But, you know, I want to see more tough matchups in the playoffs.
I mean, he's absolutely right, because you look, last year Cleveland lost one game on their way to the finals. Golden State didn't lose a game on the way to the finals.
You had a street fight in your first playoffs with, like, it's Atlanta seven games. I mean, everything was...
Oh, we had two street fights. We had seven games with Cleveland.
Yeah.
It was like it was real. It wasn't like... It wasn't hand given.
Yeah, like our team was good, but it's not a foregone conclusion that we're going to the finals
right.
and winning.
And this rivalry here is kind of unprecedented, because, you know, no team has faced each other three straight times in the finals, and now we're possibly looking at four, you know, and this doesn't happen. So I think I understand what he's saying as far as, like, you know, more. Let's see if OKC and Houston can push Golden State a little more than they pushed last year. Let's see if Boston and Toronto can push Cleveland a little bit more than they were pushed last year. And I think it'll make for a fun league, because rivalries are fun.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't get bored with seeing a rivalry. I mean, Boston and Lakers were rivalry. But it's just the path to get there. We like it to be a little more exciting.
Yeah,
and
sure.
You came in with LeBron, D-Wade, Melo, right? Are you guys shocked at how he is maintained?
Bron?
Yeah. Like, how is, like, and I know, like, you had the lung thing, but, like D-Wade has dropped off a lot. Mm. You know, like, Melo has lost a step. Like, how is he still on top?
Yeah, it's kind of incredible to watch. I mean, but I've seen his work ethic, and he works really hard. And he works to maintain his body, and he's very serious about that. More serious than... He took it to a level, I was like, all right, you know, that's cool. I'm not really, I'll do some, but this is insane. And it's paying off for him now. So, I mean, you know, it's a tough thing to do, to perform at an older age and to see him still do it. I mean, he takes it very seriously. So, you know, just so people know, he puts a lot of work in. So more than people will ever know to be able to go out there and perform.
I mean, no doubt that LeBron, you can see his work ethic on the court, but... He's 2 years younger than Wade and Melo also.
Yeah.
You know, he came out of high school. So he has a little more youth to himself. I mean, so that that has to put an effect too. And, you know, because when you get older, when you start getting around at 34, 35, it's not as easy to wake out of the bed. You know, you wake out of the bed like, then you stand up, you're like, oh, do you hear some crack, 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 crack. You know what I'm saying? It's a little harder to get out. He laughing because he know what I'm talking about.
How do you get out of the bed now?
Listen, this is how I get out of the bed. I got tennis shoes right there. I can't walk barefoot. I have my tennis shoes on, so I just got my boxers on to go to the bathroom. And then when I come back, take them off, jump back in the bed. That's when your feet been through a lot of miles.
Paul, you got a championship out of your run in Boston, but I hear you guys talk all the time about the 09 team and how good they were. You're maybe a Kendrick Perkins injury away from winning in 2010. What percentage of you looks back in that era and say, man, we did a lot, and what percentage is, man, we could have done even more?
Oh, I say it all the time. I thought we had a team that could have three-peated, because if you look, we won, I think, 62 games the second year after we won it. Kevin got hurt after 30 games, and so we played 40 games in playoffs without Kevin and still won 60 games. I believe we were 29-2, something around 29-2. We were talking about, everybody's talking about us winning 70. If Kevin was healthy, we probably would have won 70 games. 2010, we coasted. We only won 50 games, and when playoffs come, we turn it up, get to the finals. And in 2011, I'm not sure, when we had Shaq, think about this front line. We had a front line. This is the first year in Miami.
Yeah.
Was Miami with Chris and LeBron. We had Shaq, Jermaine O'Neal, Kendrick Perkins, Garnett, and Big Baby. Like, if you talk about,
you got to guard all them guys, man. And hey, you the stretch five,
man. Like, you got Big Baby.
Ask him about that.
He always got me.
I remember Shaq fouled him so hard one time, because that's at that point Shaq, you know, wasn't Lakers Shaq, so he was pretty much, who y'all want me to foul? I was like, okay, we got that covered.
I mean, same question, right? Like, you guys come away with two, but, like, Dallas missed opportunity.
Yeah.
And then even, like, I mean, I know San Antonio was on a mission that following year, but, I mean, you guys sort of thought you probably could have won a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole it gave me respect for the three-peat. It lets you know that there's another level of basketball that you just are not privy to. You were there, but we didn't do enough to get over the hump. That first one in Dallas, I don't think we were experienced enough. We weren't ready for that moment. They were, and we just didn't play well. You know, nobody played well. The next year, we were on a mission. The next year, you know, luck was on our side. And that motivated San Antonio, you know. So in beating them, you create a monster. And we didn't do the process necessary when we got back. You know, we weren't playing well at the right time. The team flow was off. Sometimes you just get to the finals, you're not good enough.
Which
you
one?
Know?
Which one hurts the most? Like Dallas?
The first one, yeah, by far.
10?
Game 7 versus the Lakers. We have a lead.
13, up 13.
Quarter.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'll never forget that. Oh, that slipped out.
Have you ever, have you ever watched it?
I've never.
Have you ever went back and watched Game 6?
I don't think I will.
I haven't watched when we lost in high school. I lost the state championship in my junior year in high school. I haven't watched that.
You know they run this stuff on NBA TV all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's
summertime.
Chris, Paul and LeBron's rivalry, some of the historic matchups you guys had together, but you versus KG was heated at times. That was
a little bit. Was it heated?
From the press box, it looked pretty nasty out there.
Yeah, you know what, man? That was my hero growing up, you know, and he was the guy that I wanted to be like. And I never remember, like, my second year in the league, I had a good game against him, and we won. And he didn't like that. He's very competitive. So from that point on, every time we played, I knew what it was going to be, you know. And not only then we went to Boston, it's like, God damn, now I'm going to get, my ass whooped. Every night, just trying to get the ball, it would be a wrestling match with that guy every day. And I remember we were in I saw him in Atlanta. He was telling me about it. I said, man, I'm glad you told me that, because I thought you was just, you was like, man, I would wait for him at half court and just grab him. I'm looking at the refs like, yo. And it just, you know, it'd be like that every game. But it got to the point when we played the Celtics, I knew you can't sleep the night before, because I know, like, and both of us going to have, like, 12 points, you know, 9 rebounds and, like,
This is not a dance. This is going to be a bar fight. It's going to be a bar fight with KG. It's not no dance.
We had guy after guy come in here, young guys even, Oladipo, Larry Nance, just asking them, what's the meanest thing somebody said to you on the court? Both of them, KG. Yeah. It was KG. What did he say?
Yeah. He's mean, bro.
Worst trash talker, KG.
I'll tell you a story. So we're in Chicago. I think Joakim Noah. This is the story on, like, Joakim Noah and KG's meeting. We're at the free throw line, and I remember I'm standing next to Joakim, and KG's on the other side. He was like, man, KG, I looked up to you. I had your poster on my wall. And KG, you know, he's full drenched sweat. He looks up at him and says, gave him the loud F-bomb. Just like, he just told the man, I look up to you. Like, I had your poster on my wall. Gave him an F-bomb right there. And that was the birth of Joakim Noah and KG's rivalry.
Well, no, you had to add, you forgot the main thing. Who is this guy? Why, Pete? Why is he talking to me? But Joakim Noah, he hates that story. And that is, you're right, that is the birth of him. He says, I felt like this big at that point. And he was right. Like, a lot of guys, you got, maybe it's because KG was an energetic big man. And everyone looked up to him. LaMarcus Aldridge, you, Noah,
he birthed generation of players.
No doubt, you know what I'm saying?
He was the face up. No, it was no other skinny guys at the time that could play. And I saw him, and it was like, that's the reason why I'm in the league. We played these guys. It was the third game of the year. I was still in Toronto, and I'm ready to go. I'm like, all right, I know what time it is. We got to play well. I didn't have a good preseason. I think I missed a couple games, so I wasn't in, you know, the best shape. Man, me and KG got into it. He got me. And I start talking to him.
He reels you in.
Overtime. Overtime, he hit me for 4 buckets in a row, 9 points.
Oh, no, I remember.
Oh.
I got it right here. Hold on.
Bro.
He caught it. Fixed the wristband. I looked around. I was there. I saw that.
Man, he dominated me. You talk about feeling that small. That hurt. You know, it was like, I went to the gym right after that. I was like, yo, it's another level. I can't play it right now.
But the one thing that KG does, though, he raises the level.
Yo, no question.
He raises, because you hear stories like this, it made him want to be better. It made him want to pick up his intensity. You know, and he did that around the league. You know, he changed the mindset of a player when you came into the game, along with Kobe. So, you know, when I'm messing with him, I know I have to be ready.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing about great players. They raise the level of other great players.
Now, I'm not trying to throw guys under the bus, but do you see that same type of attitude and intensity now?
Well, I only see it through one player. You know, this guy doesn't like anybody, I feel like. Russell Westbrook. Yeah. I mean, he plays with a scowl on his face. Like it's the 90s, early 2000s, and he has no friends on the court, like, period. You know, you see him and Kevin Durant get into it. They may be cool after, but that was the landscape of the NBA when I came in. I had friends in the NBA, but on the court, I mean, we may tussle, we elbow each other in the mouth or something, but after the game, it's like, man, let's go get a drink or something, whatever. But on the court, he plays like that every night. And you don't see that across the board, night in, night out. What makes the game so good is the competitive spirit. And we're seeing less and less of that. Guys have to bring that competitive spirit back. The talent is there across the board.
No question.
I mean, the talent is phenomenal as far as where the league is in a great place. Ultra talent. You just want to see a little more competitive spirit from some of these guys. I don't want to see DeAndre Jordan picking up Draymond Green off the floor. You know, stuff like that. And Draymond is another one.
Yeah, right.
Is that ever going to change? Like, AAU has changed basketball. Like, everybody's friends with everybody nowadays, right? Like, they're all growing up as eighth graders playing together.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing you have to do is you have to, like, embrace change. I mean, it is. I mean, because there's so much money in this game. billions of dollars at stake, reputation, images, branding. It's a whole nother landscape. You know, you look at an NBA player who has 8-9 million followers on like Instagram or Twitter. You know, that's an image thing, and that creates dollars off the court for the player. And so players don't want to do anything to damage that. And so we're in a different time, we're at a different place to where, you know, it's changed. In the 80s, it was a different game. In the 90s, it was a different game. Early 2000s, and now you're just seeing a different game. It's just the evolution of where the game is.
Chris, I've got to ask you before we go. You've talked about getting back into the league. How are you medically? Do you think you can get back into the league and cleared?
Yeah, I mean, medically, I'm fine. You know, I take medicine and stuff like that. You know, it doesn't affect me in anything. It's just, you know, the contact. That's like the huge piece to the puzzle. But for the most part, I'm taking care of my family and, you know, doing what I need to do with that. I can work out. You know, I know a lot of people ask me about my health. My health is great. I'm fine. I feel fine. And, you know, the NBA is a great place, and I'm just trying to get back to it. I mean, I'll forever be partners with the NBA, but I would like to play basketball again.
Paul, last time you thought about playing?
I can't remember. I haven't picked up a basketball since September. I've been having fun with my kids, my family. Maybe I'll get the itch, but so far I just like the way I feel.
Okay.
I can just wake up, look at the alarm clock, turn it off, and lay back down.
I got some advice. You know those little segues? You can segue around the house. Don't even have to put the shoes
right,
on.
Right.
I'm just saying, this feels like a pretty good Big Three team, like right here. Like,
oh, this would be awesome.
I'm just saying.
You got carried a dead weight around.
I'm just saying.
As long as Scal shoots all the shots, we good.
Only in the corners, man. That's the only shot I make.
Chris Bosh, Paul Pierce, Chris Mannix, Brian Scalabrine, thanks for joining us.